Welcome to Overtures. Both my guest and I from this particular episode could talk for literally ages, and I'm so glad we got through as many topics as we did. So many awesome insights, stories, and conversation. Since this episode, he was able to reprise his role as Old Man Jenkins in SpongeBob the Musical at Arizona Broadway Theater. Congrats, Steven. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly.
Hello, hello. Happy Thursday. I hope everyone's having a good day. It's a bit cloudy here in New York, but I hope everyone has a bit more sunny weather, either that or they're having a sunny day. Who knows? Intros are still one that I'm working on. Hope everyone's doing well today. Happy to see you all. Happy to see you all. Thanks for joining. I'm very excited about our guest today. Without further ado, I'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to episode 23 of Overtures. And we're going to start with a quick little video today. Let's get started.
Mama says never in anything that's bigger than your head. Is she a whiz or what? And Mama says it doesn't matter if you're a king or you're a clown. Once you run up a mountain, you can't back down.
I love that song, and I hope you all enjoyed that. My guest today is a triple threat performer and a self-starting entrepreneur. Having just opened his new artist supply business, Spike Mark Productions, Spike Mark Products, let me actually read the business right. Sorry about that. He's a proud graduate of Wagner College. Go Seahawks. Some of his most recent credits include the first national tour of the SpongeBob musical as Old Man Jenkins and cover for Squidward, multiple productions at the Fireside Dinner Theater in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, and Kansas City Starlight's Wizard of Oz. He has also been one of the article writers for the Black Theater Matters Bill, which passed at this past spring's inaugural Actors Equity Association convention. My guest today is an incredibly talented actor, singer, and dancer, but is also a very talented theater technician. I can confidently say that I know few people with a stronger work ethic such as his, and it shows in his performances he gives and anything that he's working on. So without further ado, this is Steven Callis.
Hi.
It's good to see you. We were just saying right before we went live that we haven't gotten the chance to catch up in years.
Oh, easily. Especially, it's like, it's one of those things too where like I go, oh yeah, it's been like a year or two or four with the pandemic. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like time is a weird concept now.
Yeah, no, truly. Time, I mean, we all knew time didn't exist, but we didn't realize how much it didn't exist until the pandemic. Yeah. So as most people would guess, we know each other from Wagner. You were 2 years ahead of me. I think we met in like the long hallway in campus hall waiting for a voice lesson, to that effect.
I'm going in that one.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we didn't do any shows together, but I think we had some dance classes like ballet.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. But then we were also both orientation leaders 1 year.
Yep.
So grand old time with that. I like specifically remember like the karaoke night where we're like, we got to get these theater kids to sing something other than theater. What can we sing?
Yeah. I was like, who's got pop? Who's got rock? Something other than just theater. Cause we're going to hear that the whole year.
Yeah. Cause during orientation, all these theater kids are like, this is my chance. And then all these people who just showed up to this karaoke night, not knowing what they were getting into, were like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be here. And I'm like, no, stay.
the football kids are like, that's cool, man. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go. I'm like, Like, I can't blame you on that.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, don't stop believing. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, sure.
but then after you graduated, you sound designed the play Or at Wagner, which is fun because then I was running the soundboard on it. So that was a
nice. And you were awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You did some good design.
That was the first year that we switched over that whole system. So it was a little... It was a learning curve for everyone.
It was definitely a funky system to be playing with. It was my first time really working with sound. And I honestly, like, I've learned so much from sound design just from you working on that show. And then also when like the whole Wagner group went to see Spring Awakening. I remember mm-hmm. like at the beginning of the show, you leaned over to me and you're like, do you hear that like buzz mm-hmm. or like vibration in the air? That's so all the deaf actors know, like we're getting into pre-show. And I was like, That's so interesting.
That Deaf West Spring Awakening floored me because just the concept of how they did that and how subtly none of us would be paying attention to that.
Yeah.
Like I found out through a friend, they took the subwoofers off of the rubber mounts that they're on, the like distribution mounts or whatever.
Yeah.
And sat them flat on the floor. So the actual floor, they could feel it in their feet.
That's cool.
I was like, that's the greatest concept I've ever seen. Like and they could they were signaling through the whole show too, things that like, again, we're not paying attention to, but they are.
Yeah, both like in an audio way, but I also know like to signal like beginnings of choreography and things like that. Like they would be doing signals with their like hand down on the bed or something like that, so that like everyone could be like right in it. But yeah, Deaf West is just incredible. And so
and we had another Wagner grad in that, Alex Spaniello.
Yes. He was incredible in it. And he's gone on and done obviously even more amazing things.
Evan Hansen and all the other things.
Yeah, you know, just casually. Yeah, no, amazing stuff. And I also, I think they were just announcing that Deaf West is going to be doing another show, Coda, like the movie Coda.
Oh yeah, they're going to take Coda into a musical.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how that develops because I'm all for seeing more Deaf West productions here in the city. So super down for that. But yeah, how did you first get started in theater?
Oh, let's see. the stereotypical thing of my elementary school was doing a show.
Classic.
We had a guy come in and do a show basically written in part by each grade had a little task and they wrote different things and he put them all into storyline and music and everything. So we got to do that. And I was like,
that's cute.
Oh, this is kind of cool. And then like, I spent the next couple of years doing like football and baseball and basketball, which I also love doing.
Yeah.
And then we got to middle school. My sister had been involved in the theater program at that level. And our fifth through ninth, eighth like productions were actually, they raised the bar, I have to say. It was, for a middle school, it was surprisingly really good.
No, I had a situation like that too, where like the middle school was doing really well and the high school's like, damn, we got to kick it up a notch.
Yeah, that was ours too. But yeah, so funny enough, my friend was like, well, you're playing football, now you're riding BMX bikes. Oh yeah, BMX and skateboarding started like back then.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and this is the stupidest, most stereotypical thing. He goes, yeah, but that girl you like's doing it too, and I'm doing it. So like, you can hang out with me all the time and you can hang out with her. And I was like, sold. And then I actually started doing it and I was like, both of you step out of the way.
Yeah, both of you. I have this going on.
But yeah, it just kind of caught the bug. And it was funny too, because my mom, for those middle school productions, my mom ended up building all of the sets and the props for it and running backstage. So that's kind of where the dichotomy came in of doing performance, but also doing tech. So like, we'd have rehearsal after school from like, what, 2 to 5 or something, say. We'd run home, grab some dinner, run out, whatever, grab some food, and come back for another 4 hours. I'd be working on homework. And when I was done, my mom taught me how to use a screw gun and a chop saw. Like, you know.
It's so important to also have those skills available for people to learn at that age. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so, so important. Do you remember, like, what show it was, like, with the high school that you were like, got into that and was like, oh, this is it. Move aside.
It wasn't even high school, it was middle school.
Oh, that was the middle school.
Yeah, we ended up doing Seussical, which has a near and dear place to my heart, and I know yours because of Michelle Pfock. We love her.
Of course, of course.
I was lucky enough to be the Cat in the Hat, which
that's a good role for you. I'm like, that tracks.
I want them to revive it so badly.
Honestly, I feel like there'd be a huge like demographic audience for that if they revived it anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. But yeah, so that and actually my birthday is on Dr. Seuss's birthday. So it was like one of those things of like the world coming together being like, you might be onto something, kid. So and then the next year I was able to do Beauty and the Beast as the Beast. Again, really fun thing. And high school ended up being a lot of different shows. We did And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie, which I had never done a real, we had done Shakespeare, but I had never done a play before. And it was one of the most rewarding experiences because you're like, oh, we don't have to have music and dance the whole time or at all to do a great show.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I had a, I really had a, my high school choir teacher, Dr. Robin Ganji, he sat me down one day and we were like, you know, talking through everything. And he goes, well, you know, you can do this as a job, right? I was like, yeah, but you know, it doesn't do, I've heard so many stories. He's like, go for it. At least try it. You get into college and you don't like it. You don't like whatever it is. Change your major. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not necessarily having a backup plan. He said, don't make a backup plan. Make a contiguous plan. Make something that while you're doing theater, you can also have this going at the same time, because we all know the odds of it actually clicking for anybody to be like the next star of Broadway are so minimal, but at the same time, it's still there. So if you can keep both sides of it going, you'll have a rewarding career in theater and even possibly a rewarding career outside of theater at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. And I think more people should hear that a little bit more. Like you can do both. You can, it's not like 100% in one way or the other. You can do a little bit of both or many things you want to do.
Exactly.
And so out of curiosity then, I always ask people what their like overture or like light bulb moment of like, oh, this is what I want to do with my life. I always ask about that. Was that conversation kind of the beginnings of that? Or was there any other one?
That was definitely the start of like, I had thought about it just having done so many shows and being, you know, in the theater world for so long that I was like, you know, I'd like to do that, but you know, I don't know, like whatever. And then when he said that, it kind of started the wheels turning of like, okay, well, how do I do that?
Yeah.
And then it was a lot of just like, okay, looking at how many, you know, where do I go to college for this? Because I knew I wanted to go to college, and not just for the theater training, but also because I knew there's a lot of life skills and business skills and whatnot that you have to learn that would help me out. So I, you know, looked at schools that were not only just, you know, BFA programs that were great, but I also personally wanted a little bit more of a rounded experience in college. Yeah, like
that liberal arts.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I got my degree in theater, but I have concentrations in performance and tech.
Yep.
And I was in a fraternity, go Theta Chi. and you know, but we also had like, you know, the school, we had a whole on campus experience and not just being in the city, because if I'm going to live in the city for the next like 20, 30, 40 years of my life, I kind of want to have that like out of it one last time, you know?
Totally.
But it was like, I ended up looking at what, 16 different colleges, and I auditioned for like 11 or 12, something like that. And that means going to every single one of those auditions. Like,
it's insane.
I kind of went nuts with it there. And and frankly, there are some schools I didn't apply to because A, I either knew my skill set wasn't up to that level yet. Like, I wasn't applying to Juilliard. I'm not.
Yeah. No.
And then, you know, financially, it didn't, you know. And this is nothing against the school at all. I just remember this number because it was sticker shock to me. I didn't know what college cost, but when I applied, NYU's was $66,134.
Yeah.
And that's like now low.
Yeah. Sure. I'm like, that's on the lower end probably.
Yeah. Now. And so like there were schools like that I had to say, listen, for me, my family can't do that. I can't do that. And with the amount of, you know, scholarship that goes out of there, it just doesn't make sense. So, you know, you narrow it down, where do you get in, where you don't, whatever. And I had two or three schools that I ended up being at, and Wagner was the place. So, you know, that started off the overture into, you know, kicking off the crazy college career and craziness of that, and then running into real life.
Sometimes it's just the finding the right school and the right fit that like honestly does the most for you.
Oh, 100%. There were schools, and like I auditioned for UConn up in University of Connecticut. My dad's an alumni, and I was like, okay, I got to check it out. We know friends that have gone there. We know all this. They have a whole puppetry program, which is awesome.
That's sick.
Yeah, they're like one of the few in the country that has it. But I walked on campus, and granted, I had been there before. I was in the 90s. I was little Jonathan Husky. I was the, like, I dressed up as the mascot, and the mascot and I used to run around the stadium all the time during girls' basketball games.
I love
Super
that.
And Taurasi and everything. Like, but like, I got on campus when I was actually having to make that decision. I went, this is too big. Even before I did the audition, my mom goes, do you even want to do the audition? I was like, I should. I want to see what it's like. Maybe it'll change my mind. But it was just that gut instinct of like something, nothing against anything, but just something didn't click. And as soon as I stepped on the Wagner's campus, I went, yep. This is definitely, if not it, it's one of. And
no, I had a similar moment because for most schools, I either wasn't accepted. I had one school in Minnesota that I was looking at, and then Wagner, who had accepted me to the school, but perhaps not the theater performance program, but I knew I could still study theater. So I was like, it's worth going and looking at. My dad and I did like literally like 48-hour trip, fly out the morning before admitted students day, went to it, and then flew back that night. And like the second we stepped on campus, I went, oh, yeah. I don't know what it is, but yes.
Exactly.
And it's those gut instincts, you know?
And it's one of those things too, where you said like, you know, if they had the opportunity to study something other than performance and stay within the world, so many people don't realize it's not just performance or tech. There is a whole other side of it. Business, you know,
dramaturgy.
Like exactly. Like all of the casting, whatever. There are so many other bits and pieces that go into this that are not just the big glamorous or black non-glamorous parts, but that the ones that you know of, the notable pieces of it that you know of, that, you know, anybody that's getting into theater, next time they go see a show, I always say, flip to the back and see all of those extra little names that are all in tiny. That's somebody's job.
Yeah.
You could potentially have that job. And if it's something you like and something you're good at, go for it.
Exactly. 100%. Moving on, because I know you and I are both big talkers. And so I want to make sure we get through everything that we want to get through. No, it's okay. I'm the exact same way. You sing, you act, you dance, you're a technician. We sort of talked about this a little bit, but what came first?
Definitely the performance side of it. I definitely started as an actor singer of the two, just because, you know, kid guy not put in dance classes very young, which boys dance too, and we should all dance more. But I really, so I danced, you know, a little bit through middle school and high school and whatever, and took a couple of classes towards the end of my high school career, just to, you know, I was like, oh, I need to, if I'm going to do this, I need to step up, get at least some basics going in, which really helped, you know, with auditions and whatnot for colleges. Right. And then, you know, got to college and was like, great, now let's dive into it. And had always had that tech part lingering in the background, and, you know, got to school and I asked, I was like, is there any way to be like, in both kind of thing? And they went, Phil Hickox goes, well, I love him. And he was like, well, you can, it's going to be hard, but you know, you can. And I was like, okay. And this is not a pat on the back to me. This is, I didn't realize that the last person that had done it before me was 15 years before me. So it was just navigating this, like, okay, I need one from here, one from here, but I have an AP credit and I'm going to do,
I literally remember like your folder of like figuring out what classes you had to take in order to still like do all the things.
Oh, it was graduating by the skin of my teeth in terms of like, I had to make sure that I was on the first round of scheduling days every time for every semester to make sure I got certain classes. Or like there were certain classes that I had to have overrided to let me in.
Yeah.
Because if I hadn't done a certain class one semester, I couldn't take the next one the next semester.
Well, what's cool is that since then there, I know that there has been at least one other like double major, Aaron Frangillo. So that's really exciting. I'm sure there's probably more that I don't know about since I've left now, but that's really cool to know that that's picking up a little bit more.
It's skills that everybody needs.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And with dancing, you're a very talented tapper. So let's watch a little bit. And of course, I have to include that little clip there because it is with your now fiance, Michelle E. Yeah. Carter, who's currently on national tour as Jenny Annie Dotson Katz. So exciting, but very talented tap dancer. To talk about you and Michelle for like a hot second, you two have practically done long distance your whole relationship as actors. And also both very talented actors who are constantly working on contracts, it seems. And I feel like that's an aspect of being in theater and being a theater artist that's not often talked about, is because people are often traveling for work for very long periods of time. So I think it's interesting how the relationships we develop on tours become familial because we can't see the other ones we love in our lives too. And I'm sure you can probably speak to that a little bit more than I can. But
yeah, it's definitely we met doing a summer theater contract together for, you know, 4 crazy months of the summer, doing like 7 shows in 4 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's a year younger than me. So she had another year left at school and I was planning on moving back to New York. So, you know, came home for a little bit, moved into New York, ended up seeing each other, you know, going over each other's apartments, whatever. And then I ended up getting a job, you know, out of town. Back, it was my first job was at Fireside after that. So I was not only, you know, a couple hundred miles away, I also was in another time zone.
Yeah.
So that was a fun learning curve to be like, okay, if it's 11 here, it's only 10 there, but you know, so it's definitely something that we've had to work at and, you know, find the balances of, because there's some nights where, you know, especially while she's on tour, she like texts me and goes, hey, I'm so tired, we just did 2 shows, it's Sunday, I'm grabbing food with people real quick to like pick it up, take it back to my room, scarf it down, and then I'm going to bed. Do you mind if we just talk tomorrow? And I'm like, sure, you know. And same thing on my side, you know, like if you end up having something come up, or be like, hey, I mean, one of the fun things we do is she zooms in to help me record auditions. Nice. So I'll be like, hey, I need a reader. She's like, yeah, I got time. Like, I you know, at a cafe right now, whatever. I can, like, send me the sides. So, like, zoom in and we'll do sides together. So it's definitely been, it's definitely not a thing you can just be lackadaisical about.
Yeah.
If you're going to do distance and you're going to make it work, there's concessions to make from both sides. But, you know, you got to remember why you're in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that's because you love each other. And that's, you know, and that's kind of why I popped the question to her.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And of course I said this before, but congratulations again.
Thank you.
And I think what you're saying also, I think really applies to theater people in general, like wanting to reach out to friends and family when they're like on contracts and on tour. And that's why it's so special when like people come and see you after you've been like away for like so long, or like the people in your cast become like those friends and family that you don't quite have with you at the moment. So, yeah.
That's like, and it's fun too. Like if you end up traveling, like I went out again, back in Chicago near Fort Atkinson where Fireside is. I was in Chicago for the day and I texted my roommate from tour, Teddy. I was like, hey, are you around today? And we were like, oh no, we're going to miss each other, but like have fun in Chicago. Go try here. Go try, you know?
Yeah.
And, or just like, my friend Rico, who's I think he's actually back in Chicago now, he was out in LA, you know, something popped up and I just went, hey man, what's up? Like, you know, and you know me I'm notorious for being a bad texter. I like responding to things is not from text, email, you know, when it's business stuff, sure. When it's text, I'm like, okay, cool. And I'll look
you're
at
like,
it.
I'll get to that later.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things where like, New Year's resolution, if you want to call it that, whatever.
There you go. You
know, something I'm working on is being better at that.
Yeah.
Because I'm usually good about communicating. It's just, you know, remembering to take that extra step of like, hey, you should text them today.
For sure. And I think that's definitely something that all of us theater people can work on. And I think it's always so fun to like reach out to like a theater person that I haven't talked to in forever, because then the second you start talking to them, you're like, oh, right. Yeah, no, this is fine. This is easily like, it's not.
You're like, why did we not do this earlier?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And going back to, of course, we went into this whole like tangent here. Going back to, we were talking about dance and things like that. I know you've also done a fair amount of like skateboarding, rollerblading, that kind of stuff. I can imagine that the athletic ability and bodily self-awareness required for those must have been actually very helpful when you were approaching learning dance technique.
Yeah, it definitely, it's funny because, you know, we always hear the cliched story of the football player taking ballet to be better at that.
Right.
You know, it works the other way too, though. I mean, when we did Cats in college, we had one of our football players who was an arts admin major. He ended up playing McCavity for us, which was awesome because he was hugely built and it looked so cool. But like him having that self-awareness of, you know, okay, I know how to use my body. I have the strength for it. Now let's get the agility and the finesse to it, you know, working the other way, getting our strength as dancers, because dancers are athletes too. Yeah. We're, you know, maybe not competing in a sport, but we're still athletic. You know, if you look at Broadway dancers, they're all like in the best shape of their life. And some of them are in better shape than athletes that I know that are, you know, doing the big thing.
Yeah. But like, they definitely have more flexibility. That's for sure. But like,
yeah. Well, it's like something like skateboarding. You know, I've been doing that since I was 10, 13, somewhere around there. My grandmother used to live, I was fortunate enough. My grandmother lived up the hill from, you know, a skate park in, Stamford, Connecticut. So it's a big bowl skate park. I don't do a bunch of the like street tricks, but it's bowls. So you have to get used to carving around corners, going up and down lips and whatnot. And having, like you're saying, having that self-awareness of like, okay, my feet are almost above my head right now. How do I make sure I don't fall on my face? It's kind of the same thing when you're dancing and being able to, you know, avoid people while you're skating or riding, you know, when I'm in a BMX race, you know, is also, okay, stay in your spatial awareness while you're dancing next to somebody. You don't want to turn and smack somebody because it's happened to me. I've done it to other people too, especially in battle call auditions where you have 70 people in a room that's made for 20.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it's just that awareness that, you know, you want to make sure you know where you are and where everybody else is. And the more, I mean, and I will say this, when it comes down to it, I'm not going to say I'm the best at dancing at all.
No.
I mean, I'm watching these kids, the other people on Michelle's tour on Cats.
Yeah.
That are just phenomenally beautiful dancers and just their self-awareness and their flexibility to be able to do all of that. I just sit there and I go, damn. it's just so mesmerizing to see that. But that didn't just come out of nowhere. That's hard work that people put in.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I didn't start tapping until college. I had not put a tap shoe on until I got to college.
Yeah.
And granted, yes, it was the one of the disciplines that clicked with me. So it came a little bit easier.
Right.
But, you know, you remember my senior year, I was doing two different ballet classes, two different levels at the same time, knowing that, you know, graduating from college, it doesn't keep happening consistently. You know, you have to pay for it even more out of pocket, whatever. Yeah. And I could push myself there. And luckily Rusty, who, you know, was the head of dance, said, okay, you want to do this? I'm not going to take it easy on you in class just because you had a class before me. I'm like, don't, that's what I need.
Yeah.
Because
you're like, I need that push.
Exactly. If you push yourself for it, you'll end up getting it. So like having the athletic side of it to know, how to say this, to know how much strength you need and conditioning and the physical part of it helps inform the creative part of it to be able to say, oh yes, I can actually do this. I can lift this person above my head. I can get my leg up here. I can do this. But if you don't have both of those working together, if you say, I need to be able to lift somebody, I need to work out more to get that, you know, it's finding that harmonious balance that gets you up that extra level.
Oh, totally. And I have definitely struggled with that one, at least throughout my life, because I'm like, creative side, cool. And then like, it comes to like the physical working outside. And I'm like, I'm not as great at this, but I need to work at it and we'll get there eventually.
There's certain things that I'm like, I'm gonna leave that to you guys. That's not my thing. Yeah, have fun.
You're like, yeah, I'm just, I tap out.
I know I'm not a Trina. I'm not going to be, you know, doing point or, you know,
yeah,
doing
no.
that. But partnering, you know, and learning mm-hmm. that in a dance class like that, whether it's ballet partnering, swing partnering, whatever, yeah. You can learn that from those classes.
Totally.
So get yourself into that uncomfortable situation of like, oh, this feels weird, because the more you do it, the better it will be and the more comfortable you'll start feeling with it.
Totally. Totally. And this is a complete, like, another like side tangent. One of the things that you'd mentioned in like your Google form about like things that you're like, oh, I'm happy to talk about this. You also upcycle old furniture. Where did this hobby come from?
So, my dad has always had, you know, stuff lying around, old pieces of furniture. He had an old filing cabinet at one point that was an old antique wood filing cabinet, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he had redone an old desk when I was a kid that we found on like the side of the road. It was an old farm desk, really pretty, hardwood, whatever, that he remade, and we still use it to this day. So I've always been, he's, you know, always been very hands-on and has taught me all that. And
yeah.
It ended up being a project for somebody once that like, I was like, they're like, can you do this for me? I was like, hey, yeah, that's easy. Let me try it. Let me go for it. They're like, sure, go for it. What's the worst that's going to happen? We'll just paint over it or something.
Yeah.
And it ends up being one little, little project that ended up being another big project. Like I'm now taking I do commissions here and there, like mm-hmm. whatever, as a hobby, but yeah. I'm working on an old Zenith radio right now that I'm taking from being just the old record player, which was defunct. And the, obviously the radio system, it worked. It definitely worked, but the wiring was all dangerously corroded.
Yeah.
Took all of that out and I put in a new, Bluetooth record player. I'm going to be putting in a speaker system. I'm going to put, you know, one of the Alexa chips or whatever, into it. But also the other part of it, it's going to be a bar. So it's going to have bottle storage. It's going to have all that. I'm going to put LEDs on the inside of it and everything. So, and then, you know, you have a little fun with it. There's some paint or the stain and stuff is chipping off of one of the parts. So I'm going to paint that and make a little highlight, you know, but it's just something that I found that I'm very good with my hands. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the tech theater too. There's a lot of this carpet and stuff that, and painting and, you know, effects and whatever that it taught me to do with that. I mean, the desk I'm working on right now is literally one that I made. It's an old Sears and Roebuck workbench that I retrofitted. And, you know, so if you can find those things and you have that skill set and you have the tools, I've been lucky. My dad, you know, from his dad and my dad, now I get to use all those tools and have bought myself some, but, you know, if you have that capacity even just to, you know, sand down something and paint it, you can upcycle things that would either A, be thrown out, or B, you just find for free.
Yeah.
I mean, half of our apartment or house or whatever we end up, Michelle and I end up in when we move, like, because I'm actually technically at my parents' house right now because of the pandemic.
Yeah, of course.
But when, and she's on tour. But so when she comes back from tour and everything and we find our own place, half of it's going to be stuff that her and I have both upcycled. Like, and then other furniture that we've had and saved. So like, it's saving us literally thousands of dollars.
No, literally, people in New York, I'm like, stoop things.
Yes.
Stoop them. Like literally right before Harry and I moved into this apartment, like we found like this, really gorgeous, like wooden, it's essentially a TV stand. It's like an end table, but it's like, it has two shelves and like a gorgeous top. It's like a nice, like wooden color. And I'm like, so are we taking that? He's like, yeah. We like pick it up off the side of the road and we're like, okay, it's ours now. And just like the things you can stoop. I'm super one for like you know, reduce, reuse, recycle. And like, it's so cool when you get to see these like gorgeous, like old pieces of like furniture and people are like, I don't really want this because it has like whatever scratch. And I'm like, cool. So that's mine now.
And it's like, and like, okay, there's a little bit of water damage on something. If it's hardwood and not just like, you know, a little veneer, sand it down, throw a coat of sand on it or paint it, you know, and that's actually, you said, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle. I was the green captain for my tour for Broadway Green Alliance. So like, that was how it's a way that I can help reuse things and not let them go into landfill or, you know, granted getting recycled is great, but only, you know, our country is not the best when it comes to recycling. Right. The percentage that we do is very low of what actually comes back out. So anything that can be used multiple times or, you know, kept in the family, you know, there's no reason not to. And if you can't do it, look around. Somebody else will either use it or somebody can do it for you if you don't have those skills. And all you have to do is ask. If the worst, and this is just a general thing, the worst thing that somebody can do is say no or give you something that's astronomical and out of your price range that you have to say no.
Yeah.
You know, audition, same thing. You go in, what are they going to do? Say no? Great.
Move on to the next.
Exactly. They're looking for a solution and so are you.
Yeah.
And you're coming together to do something good. So totally. whether it's you coming together to make a furniture piece, to make, you know, a piece of art, to audition for something, whatever it is, you can move forward saying, I tried it, I went for it, and there you go.
Exactly. And for those who may not know, what is a green captain on a tour?
Oh, so for Broadway Green Alliance is an organization that focuses on trying to make the theater industry more climate friendly. You know, they helped push that a lot of the Broadway theaters now have solar panels on the roof or have changed their lighting up from being incandescent fixtures to LED fixtures and, you know, lower the energy consumption for a lot of these places. So on my tour, it was, you know, trying to figure out things like, hey, something as simple as going around and putting signs up saying, here's a recycle bin, making sure that like, if I found one and there wasn't in the dressing room, pulling it in, you know, if we were allowed to. So making people aware, it's a lot of awareness work, but also, you know, talking to our head carp. I was like, hey, Josh, is there, you know, we're using Mylar right now. Is there a reason that we're using that and that we can't use something that's same effect, but, you know, it's going to biodegrade or something like that. And granted, there's stuff like that that I don't have any control over.
Right.
But I can make the suggestion and some of it, you know, gets implemented and some of it doesn't. And it's just, it's finding that balance as to what you can do and making it so that our footprint for each show, each production and each theater is as minimal on the environment as we can be. That way, you know, we're going about it a sustainable way instead of just, you know, it killed me in high school. Some of our high school.
All in the dumpster.
That's thousands and thousands of dollars of lumber.
Yeah. That, you know, can be easily reused.
Now, granted, like if something's shot or like the only way you're going to get up a piece of Luan is to smash it. Then don't worry about it. Like you do in high school being idiots. We're like, hey, watch this.
Yeah.
Like, okay, fine. Like that can get thrown out, but also that could be recycled. That could be wood chips. That can go back into be fiberboard or something like that. So it's stuff like that, figuring out like, hey, instead of throwing it all in the dumpster, what stuff can be recycled? What can we, you know, sort out and make sure it goes to the right place to be taken care of the right way?
Totally. And this is a fun segue that I didn't expect to have, but in terms of like reusing things and repurposing them in ways that you wouldn't necessarily expect for a set or a national tour, you're Under the Sea with SpongeBob the Musical. What was your audition process like for that?
So, SpongeBob. the craziest journey of my life, and I love it so much. I just, you know, endless gratitude to Tina Landau and Chris Catelli and Lou and Julie and Tim and the entire team. I'm going to forget somebody's name, but when I fun fact, had an agent for about 5 months when I started out and got was sent two auditions. They didn't even know when I was coming off contract from my last show to be able to start putting me in for things. Because for those that don't know, auditions happen months before a production, like about 5 to 6 months before a production, usually give or take, hopefully. So I was like, what the hell? Like, you're not getting me anything. Bye. So for the past, from then till now, I've been my own agent. You know, it doesn't necessarily, I would love to have one right now. That's not me saying I don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very much at the point that, and here's the thing, you hit a point where you're like, okay, I need to get in those next rooms. I definitely could use that right now. So if you're listening, hi. you know, I emailed the casting director and I found out, I thought it was the Broadway one. They actually switched casting teams for the tour. Mm-hmm. And I said, like, hi, Christine, my name's Steven. I'd love to submit myself for SpongeBob, for Squidward, you know, and sent in my stuff. Took a couple of emails and maybe a handwritten note. I don't remember. it was one of those that I was like, I saw the show on Broadway and I was like, I could do this. You know that feeling when you're like, that's a show I could do.
You're like, so
I
was like, that one's mine.
I was like, that was mine. I'm going for that no matter what. So I definitely pushed a little bit. You got to know the balance. There is a such thing as overstepping and pushing too far.
Absolutely.
But so I got in for my first audition. It was just the casting director and the accompanist. They had me read Squidward and sing a little bit and whatever. And they were like, great. Okay, thanks. I leave. Week and a half later, they bring me back in. And also, this is like a week at least between everything, at least a week. So you're sitting there like, water. But it's just like, so you keep waiting. I get another call back. I go in for the casting director, Christine, and Tina was there this time just to, you know, see. Then we come back for a dance call that is dance movement with a giant group of people. And it was really cool because Tina actually goes, so also bring your special skills. So I brought my skateboard, you know, and other people had theirs. And it was one of the coolest experiences because you had every body type, every, you know, voice type, every type of person that you could think of was pretty much in that room.
Good.
Thank you, Tina. She's awesome.
Yes, she's amazing.
And bringing that group together was just so cool, just in the auditions alone. And you had moments where, like, I had just done my thing. I was done. And another kid was like, I couldn't fly my skateboard in. I came in from the West Coast. Like, he just didn't think that he could fly it. And I go, here, use it, kind of thing. So he just took my skateboard and used it. Same thing with another kid. He handed off, I think he had juggling balls with him. And he's like, oh, I didn't think to bring those. And the kid's like, here, take it. And, you know, did his trick.
I love that.
So it was a great community experience. So then from that, I think there was one more call that was like another, a little bit bigger of a production group that was on the other side of the table. And then I came in for my final call, which was hilarious because I read for every single character except for Patrick and Mr. Krabs. I literally did.
You were like, I have no idea what's happening.
Oh, Tina and Christine go, we want to use you. We have absolutely no idea what your track is going to end up being because
you're like, that's at least a nice vote of confidence.
I was like, that's a good vote. You want to hire me? Great. Like, yeah. And they went through and were like, okay. And it, again, not talking myself up, it was one of the, you could fit those, but you realistically could fit that and you could fit, okay. And that's something I prided myself on is being utilitarian like that because. Mm-hmm. On my resume, almost every other thing has understudy, cover, swing, understudy, cover. I've made my career off that because if you can be a chameleon, it gets you into more places than just having one trick.
Oh, totally.
And granted, that's not to say the one trick isn't a bad thing.
Right.
You know, there's people that pride themselves on doing, I don't know, Buddy Holly because they're musicians or once or, you know, singing the high E that they need to sing. Having that in your bag of tricks is great, you know? So that's just how my career has gone. Others go different ways. But we get the funny story about the last audition, though. We get sent out of the room to learn the dance with Lou, and it's two of us. we dance, Luke comes back in, we dance, and we think, oh, okay, great, we're done. And the way it was said, me and this other girl who ended up getting the tour, Ayana, we walk out and we leave. We get our stuff and we leave.
Oh,
and
no.
The casting director goes, oh my God, guys, I'm so sorry. And you just come back and do it with like the whole team in the room. And we're like, okay, I'm almost at my car.
So we, oh my God.
We both turn around, and she was almost on the train. So we turn around, sprint back. We're like, hi, high five, and like ran in there. And with when I was doing all of those different parts of the audition, they were like, oh, we didn't send you the electric skate stuff, which I ended up covering, the three skateboarders show. He's like, but like, here, hold on. And somebody gets up from behind the table and they like go, okay, like, do you know the song kind of thing? I was like, yeah, I'm kind of familiar with it. He like starts playing it. I was like, oh yeah, yeah. And I'm just singing along as he's playing it. And that was the extent of that singing. Tina goes, you've listened to the soundtrack, haven't you? I was like, yeah. Well, like, you've listened to it a lot. I was like, yeah. Come to figure out, that was Tim Rice. Was it Tim Rice?
I'm trying to think of that.
Did I just fuck that up? Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine. We're not censoring by any means.
No,
it was on YouTube. I'm trying to think for that song. Both of us going immediately to Wikipedia, like, being like,
why am I
SpongeBob musical?
I'm also like,
for those who don't know SpongeBob the musical, we are debating on this specifically because SpongeBob, all the songs are written by completely different people, both inside the Broadway world and outside the Broadway world.
Kyle Jarrow was there. He was the book writer.
Yes.
I told you I was going to forget somebody's name. Like
inevitably, just, but like this happens to me all the time with just like,
I know it's by Steven Tyler and Joe Perry.
Because
that's Aerosmith. Yeah. I actually ended up seeing them in Vegas when we were out there.
They were awesome. That's sick.
Tom Kitt.
There we go.
Yeah. So I was right. Okay. God, I gave myself a heart attack.
No, you said Tim Rice, but Tom Kitt is like very close. No, that's okay. Here's the thing. We got it. We're fine. Yeah. There's so many names.
I had a late shift last night at work, so my brain is still like,
you're literally no, totally
Tom Kitt stood up, the guy that did Next to Normal.
Yeah,
I was like, again, that's how nervous I was when I found out, and thank God I did not know in that moment, because I would have been geeking out. And I'm standing there at the panel like, if you and I'm just like jamming out, kind of cool, like whatever. I would have been like oh, but it's one of those things where, like, you never know who's in those rooms. I would have never thought that was him.
Yeah.
I know the face. I know what he looks like. Like,
totally just, like, didn't even click.
But he's just a human. He got up from the table and was like, what's up, man? I was like, oh, cool. It's another person. I figured he was the MD. Because that's that's usually what I mean, granted, I had never been in for a national tour or that far into a national tour callback. You know, I mean, frankly, I've been lucky enough to do that more times now, but like, that was my first experience, especially with a show of that caliber.
Yeah.
Like, I knew Tina was in, I knew, you know, Chris was in, but it was one of those where I was like, I didn't realize that it was him in the room.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, like, when I danced, it was Chris Catelli. You know me, I'm a fansy as hard as they come.
Yeah, exactly.
My first show out of college was Davey and Newsies, where our choreographer is friends with Chris, and we got to do the original choreography.
And you
it
were
was
like,
bonkers. And come to find out, we did it in the round. So they took a little like rehearsal clip of it. And he goes, oh yeah, I've seen you dance before. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Internally you were like,
dance. Here's the thing, when you meet him, he is the sweetest, nicest guy in the world.
And I can imagine.
All just normal human beings.
That's also something we need to remember when we enter any audition room. It's like, all of these people, albeit have done amazing things, but we are all just humans trying to collaborate together.
Yeah. That's like, there's so many people that people are like fanning over so hard. And you just got to remember, like, they're human. They will make mistakes. I saw Bernadette Peters screw up the lyrics to Hello Dolly because I saw her on the first night she was in. And same. She laughed it off, played it off, and went forward.
And she just kept going.
She kept going. I was like, great, cool.
Yeah, no, you know? She had a blast that night. Like, it was so
good. My God. She was having so much fun.
It was so
good. But stuff like that, it's like somebody who has multiple Tony Awards and is stupid famous.
Yeah. We're all going to mess up. Mistake
that I would do on stage too.
Yeah, like exactly. And because we're talking about all this SpongeBob stuff, I have to show a clip of it. You had a grand old time playing Old Man Jenkins. It's incredible. Oh my gosh. If I can just get it to be full screen, that would be iconic. Let me stop sharing that screen and switch over to the other screen. Because technology is never easy. Why would it ever be easy?
Never. And it's funny because doing that show, I have to say, is dance-wise, like, because we're talking about that, was nuts. Because one of the clips you'll see is straight out the gate. The first number of the show is a 5 or 6 person dance break that, you know, you have to be ready for. And I, mind you, I started as the security guard during the show. So I had to be out in the house like 5 or 10 minutes early.
Oh my gosh.
Sprint in, get patchy off the stage.
And then suddenly you look like this. Like,
get changed, do 3 other sections of the number, and then come into this. So like, if anybody says, oh, I'll warm up as I'm doing the show, don't do that.
Don't hurt yourself. Or just
get ready beforehand and then you do crazy things like this.
And luckily, you're pretty easy to watch in this one. Come on, Buffy. Oh, it's just all so fun and so good. And I'll let people watch the rest of it at another time and place. But SpongeBob is so fun. And I'm going to immediately jump to some Instagram questions because we had some in relation specifically to SpongeBob. First one is from a friend of mine, and you know him, of course, as well, Liam Abate. Do you have any funny stories from the SpongeBob SquarePants musical tour?
Oh, let's see. There are so many times that, like, we would just, I don't want to say screw around, but we had license. Tina gave us license for improv certain times, which was great. So like when we come on screaming and thrashing at the end of the show and the whole town's destroyed, you know, we had our set where we had to be and how we get on or whatever, but like the dialogue, we could change a little bit and be like, oh my God, what's going on? So like, my friend Josh and I would change it up every so often on each other, and just to keep each other on our toes, not to make each other break, but just to like, and say keep yes. And but there's also moments that, like, when you're backstage and you can see each other on the other side, Old Man Jenkins sometimes just started flossing, or like twerking. And it was funny because we'd be like, oh, you're, and we'd have dance battles across, like, right before we entered. Now, granted, I'm full able body, but I was supposed to be using a cane, so I'd be like, yeah. As in, like, walked on stage. So it'd be like an instant switch before I went on. And our Foley guy looked down one night and he goes, how long have you been making faces at me? I go, a long time.
But that's the thing. I was glad you found it.
Yeah, you got to have fun with that though on a show like this. And it's just a fun show. There are more crazy antics. Some I can probably talk about at a later date. Some I can't talk about because they're just
Exactly. And then my mom had a great question. She wanted to know what was perhaps some of the hardest and some of the easiest aspects of closing this show at the onset of COVID.
I think I can't say any of it was easy.
Right.
It was very abrupt. And funny enough, it happened on Friday the 13th. We got sent home, which usually is my lucky day of all things.
Yeah.
But it was, I think one of the funniest things to look back on is the mayor in our show did these speeches that were like, we're going to set up this, to do that, to form a committee. And like, it was all of this stuff that was happening in real life. Ugh. So somebody in the audience just went, ha ha ha. And it made all of us laugh because that was the easy part of the show, was saying, okay, this could come to a close at any point, but this is art imitating life right now.
Yeah.
So the hardest thing was, you know, going home And I had a feeling when they sent us home, I gave everybody a hug one last time. People were like, no, I'll see you in 2 weeks. I'll see you in 2 weeks. I was like,
I don't think.
Give me a hug. I don't care if it's 2 weeks. I want a hug. Said my goodbyes, which put, I think, part of me at ease. But, you know, still getting home and getting that news like, hey, we're not sending the tour back out because, you know, it's just not going to happen. You know, it was hard. It was very hard. But I can say, you know, the second to last show that we did was a matinee with about 2,000 students in the audience that night. And the ruckus craziness of that show is something I will hold on to forever. Because if you're going to go out like that, people were screaming, people were laughing, people were having so much fun. And, you know,
that's go out with a bang. Yeah,
exactly.
No, I had a similar situation with the, like, everyone going home being like, yeah, we kind of know. Because I was working on a production of Merrily in grad school, and we were right about to enter tech weekend. And so it was like we were rehearsing act two all the way through for the last. And so, like, literally we sang. I know. We literally sang that last song. And by the end of it, we were all just, like, sobbing. And then we all went to, like, the bar afterwards. But yeah, it was so hard in so many ways. But I'm glad that some of you were able to have that moment of being like, okay, I'm saying goodbye now just in case. And if it doesn't end up being goodbye, then good. But if not, then you have those moments.
Prepare for the worst, hope for the best, and, you know, just keep running full speed until you can't.
Always. And I would be remiss to end this episode without talking about the little business you've drummed up, Spike Mark Productions. First is a question from Instagram that's kind of taking my spot in this part of the interview, but could you recount the journey real quick of founding your company and also explain the capital K at the end of Spike Mark?
So Spike Mark Products is a company that I've started. I'm now a actual full-fledged LLC, which is
awesome. Hell yeah.
That journey was terrifying, to say the least, because I was not a business major. Didn't know it. So I actually started working on this back in, like, 2019, before the pandemic started.
I vaguely remember the beginnings of that.
Yeah. I made a friend a Secret Santa box. That was just like, hey, you like tools. I'm going to throw all of your, like, the makeup stuff that you need for a dressing station into a toolbox. Cause we all know those boxes they give us always break. The plastic sterile containers, they always snap or whatever. And you can't get
it. Always.
You can never reuse it. So I was like, here, let me give you, it's a 13-inch toolbox, nice and tough. Doesn't take much room up in your suitcase, but you have everything you need. And I gave it to him and he goes, dude, these are awesome. You know, you could sell these, right? I was like, really?
Ding,
light bulb.
Right. Yeah.
But so it ended up being one of those things where it's like, okay, I could do that. And then, you know, maybe take some of the worksheets, like, from being a swing, because none of that's codified. And I guess that's the aim, is to take some of the stuff that's I've gotten used to and used. Now, granted, everybody's going to be different, but giving a generalized form of it to codify it a little bit, to let others have those tools is something that I want to do. And then my fiance actually gave me the idea for the tap kit, because she's a rhythm tapper. She's a crazy good rhythm tapper.
Yeah.
Always has been. And, you know, she burns through shoes or will, you know, break the shoe every so often. So I was like, what do you have in there? And so, like, again, I asked her if I could use it. She was like, sure, go ahead. I was like, yeah, well, because now whatever you get is mine and mine is yours. It's fine. So, you know, I put these together. They're a nice small kit that fits in your bag. And, you know, it's something, though, that every tap dancer should be able to do themselves. You shouldn't have to take it to a cobbler and pay, you know, $70 for them to fix it. If it's something that big, yeah. But if it's just fixing a screw in your tap shoe, that's an easy half an hour project.
You know? The amount of times that I remember, like, people in, like, tap class at Wagner, like, a screw came out of their shoe and they're like, I don't have one. Mary's Six, like, had things like that with her in case anyone needed it too. So,
and that's,
like,
the thing is, everybody, every tap dancer carries around their own pack, but everybody's pack is different. So I, again, have asked friends, took the generality of it and put it all in together in one. And to touch on the K, Spike Mark is a name that I think fits the theater industry, you know, and having been a tech, you know, I'm always Spike Marks. But my initials are SK. So I kind of did that as a little like, oh, like, and it also
it's me too. It's my company. I'm a part of it.
A gives you the right angle of what a spike mark would be.
Hey, there you go. I didn't even get that part.
Yeah, it's all this like subtle stuff that I was trying to do, and like I did like the Google of like, what do you do in a marketing logo? Like,
it's good branding.
Yeah, you come up with something and see if it works. You know,
exactly.
And I think it's stuck so far, and hopefully it'll go further.
Exactly. And I figure I will share the screen of the website really quick just so people can like see Spike Mark. So you don't miss your mark. But yeah, there's lots of really cool products on here. We were talking about the toolbox here. We also have the tap repair kit there. Lots of really cool stuff. You do some like custom cuts with like music and things like that.
Yeah.
Too.
So I've actually done my whole book, my personal book. To make it so that instead of having all these Frankenstein cuts or multiple page turns, if you're doing 32 bars at the most in an audition, mm-hmm. I have never been asked to sing a whole song. And if I am, I just say, hey, like, I don't have a whole song. They're like, okay, sing whatever your longest cut is. Great.
Yeah. You only need a 32 bar cut of Rodgers and Hammerstein, fam. Like, not even.
And I think, and so like the biggest cut that I have is 3 pages. And instead of making it so that they're back to back, I just make it 1, 2, and then a fold out 3. But I take any cut and, you know, make it so that it just opens book style for your accompanist so that all they have to do is look at it. There's no page turn. Their hand doesn't come off the piano. So you get exactly what you want to hear.
Exactly.
And also taking some of those songs that are, you know, a wonky cut, or you want a key change, or you want, you know, it's in a different key and transposing it down. You know, I don't buy the music. I can buy it on your behalf, and make sure that the licensing and the rights and money goes to the right people. I'm just a facilitator of, you know,
making
getting
it
those
nice
cuts,
and easy.
Make cleaning it up. So I can do anything from, you know, a small, you really want to go small, 8-bar cut, you know, they ask for that sometimes.
They do.
Or if you do want a whole song, you know, just set up for you in the right way. Or if you want to, you know, if you want your whole book done for auditions, you know, we can do that. It's just taking it and making it clean and organized. Those are my like 2 things recently. It's like just clean and organized, because if you can do that in the moment or when you need something, you won't get flustered. There won't be any craziness going on. It's just boom, there you go.
Yep. Yep. I couldn't have said it better myself.
And that's the same thing that goes with the kits. When you need to fix your tap shoe, it's right there. If you need, you know, your stuff at your dressing station, it's right there. I honestly, and after having been on tour, those are kits that they always talk about stacking up. And granted, they don't fit, you know, the huge bottles of stuff that people might need. But, you know, if you're going to be traveling around doing a show, whether that's a sit down show or something else, having that clean and easy little kit that just tucks away and being able to travel it real quick, what more can you ask for?
Exactly. It's all about being prepared. And that is very fitting for you as a human. You're always prepared, all that good stuff. But yeah, we've come to the end of the episode here. I know, it's crazy. Where can people find you online? Obviously, I'll put the link for your website, both professionally and Spike Mark, in the description of this video. But where can people find you, like on social media and such?
So I'm pretty easy to find. I'm at Stephen C, as in cat, Stephen C. Callis. Pretty much on every social media, whether that's TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, you know, all those things. Spike Mark is also on there. Spike Mark Products is usually the at for all of those.
Cool.
And then same thing with the website, StephenCCallis.com, SpikeMarkProducts.com.
Amazing. Yay. Easy places to find you. And again, I'll put all of those links with the social medias and all that stuff down below. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Marjoram, my website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show, Overtures, on Instagram at Overtures Show. There's 2 S's, but I promise it looks correct. And then if you're here watching the episode, congrats, you found the YouTube. I'm so proud of you. Follow, subscribe, like, comment. All that good stuff. Join us live. Say hello when we're going live. I know it's not always consistent because I'm a theater person too, so I will never have a consistent schedule, but we hope that you'll join us at some point. But yeah, Stephen, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Have fun, make mistakes, get messy, all the Miss Frizzle things, and just have fun with it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And with that, thanks for watching, and I hope everyone has a great day.